and welcome to the fourth instalment of this new series of shows sponsored by Dublin City Comics and Collectibles, where we, the Full Force, take an in-depth look at the old Action Force comics in no particular order. I am Chris Lauren Disorder McLeod, aka Diagnostic 80, and joining me on this new episode, as always, because it was mainly his idea in the first place, is Brian Disorderly Conduct in a Public Place Hickey. So let's get on with it, shall we? Explosion.
Proceeding with reckless abandon, thrashing through the back catalogue of Battle Action Force, this episode of Disorder of Battle brings you... ATTACK!
Originally published in Battle Action Force over four issues from 3rd to 24th December 1983. The credits on this issue include writer Jerry Day, artist Jim Bleach, lettering by Clive McGee, and for those familiar with the coloured version of this comic, available on bloodforthebaron.com, the colouring work was done by Bart Simon and Chris Smith on this particular series.
The cast includes Baron Ironblood, the Black Major, Red Vulture, Red Laser, scores of Red Shadows, a Shadow Track, more than one Shadow Track, lots of Laser Exterminators, South American Military Forces, and, spoiler alert, SAS Force Commandos.
That needs another explosion right there. So, our story synopsis. At a secret base, in the heart of a South American jungle, the evil Baron Ironblood ruthlessly trains a new set of recruits for his army of Red Shadows. On the assault course, the Black Major supervises such a group as they make their way through a series of obstacles in the form of lethal death traps.
I mean, this isn't the most intelligent thing to do as a... You know, like, you kind of want to keep as many, you know, fanatical soldiers on your side as possible. And obviously, you know, that it's not like you're going to be creating enemies, that you're just going to be killing them, which is just crazy. I mean, like, yeah, I love that. It's just so bonkers, isn't it?
Well, that opening panel where we see the Black Major urging them on, I'm counting 20 Red Shadows in that. And they're being fired upon by machine gun fire, and the Red Shadow nearest to us has obviously been taking a hit in the back.
Arr.
Either that, or it's International Pirate Day in South America.
Yes.
But the traps are absolutely insane. You know, there's the classic a pit with spikes. There's a piranha-filled river.
Amazing.
There's a tripwire that kind of releases grenades from above. I mean, I think that's particularly hideous.
Very practical.
A falling tree. That's a good one. A tripwire that actually lands a tree on top of you. A flying axe, and of course, no death obstacle course would be complete without a minefield in the mix.
And all the time being shot at by a machine gun the entire time. It's insane, isn't it? I think it's hilarious. And it just kind of really, it kind of highlights that 80s villain kind of evil organization thing to a T, isn't it? It's like you have to be absolutely insane to want to be part of that, because there's only going to be a few people getting through the training. And I suppose, you know, it's just, they just make it horrible and vile and as bad as they can make it. Anyway, the Red Shadows are required to navigate the deadly assault course and reach the spot where Baron Ironblood awaits before their time runs out. Only a few manage to make it through the maze of death. One unfortunate Shadow reaches the Baron seconds after the deadline to complete the course and is shot dead by Ironblood on the spot.
Oh dear. I mean, Ironblood, he's completely insane. I mean, of the 20 Red Shadows we see at the start of this comic, by the time it gets to this scene, there's only about four or five of them left. So three quarters of his recruits are wiped out on the training course.
I mean, like I said, intelligence would suggest that the more bodies you have, whether they're fodder or not, again, it is going to be an advantage for you in battle. But obviously, in this case, rather than training them up to be good at, you know, evading and avoiding these things and maybe identifying problems as they arise, they just, like, kill everybody, and whoever's left is just lucky.
Yeah.
So it just, I just boggles my mind how hilarious that is. It's so 80s.
There we go. There's Aaron Blood's tactical strategy in a nutshell. Look, they'll have the luckiest guys in the world on their side, and that will help them prevail.
Amazing.
Anyway, 2 days later, the Baron and his force of Red Shadows, the lucky ones, are poised to attack a military base near an undisclosed South American capital city. He orders the Black Major to capture as much weapons and ammunition as possible. Recent Action Force attacks have depleted their supplies of valuable equipment, and they desperately need to restock.
The Black Major and his forces move in silently on the base. From the darkness, a Red Death descends on the sentries patrolling the perimeter. With the outer guards taken care of, one Red Shadow begins to cut through the wire of the fence. However, as he flounders with the wire cutter, he is spotted by one of the guards inside the base, and an all-out battle ensues.
With their cover blown, the Red Shadows forgo stealth for an all-out assault. A laser exterminator blows a huge gap in the fence. Scores of Red Shadows pour through, and vicious hand-to-hand fighting ensues as they engage the local military forces.
And this is where we see the Shadow Tracks and Laser Exterminators in action. Again, it's cool to see these vehicles utilized throughout. Where if you're not like if you're not really like, you haven't read any of the Battle Action Force comics, then all you really have to go by in terms of, you know, seeing these things is by the toys and by the packaging. So it's really cool. Like, you know, if you haven't like experienced the comics, it's a really good way of, you know, seeing a lot of this Palatoy product kind of in action. And I think that's, you know, one of the things. There wasn't a kind of cartoon for it. There wasn't, you know, there are a few commercials out there, but they're very hard to get hold of. I think there's a few on YouTube you can probably see, but for the most part, you know, this is the only time you really get to see laser exterminators, Shadow Tracks, Robo Skulls, etc., like actually doing cool stuff. So yeah,
that's a really key point, because obviously on the G.I. Joe side of things or across the Atlantic, I mean, there were the comic books, but there was also the cartoon series. So over here, Palatoy relied entirely on Battle Action Force for their content marketing to kind of get the, you know, get kids kind of, you know, excited about the toys and to make them aware, obviously, of new product as it came up. We see a lot of Shadow Tracks and Laser Exterminators in this particular battle sequence, and part of me feels that maybe it actually synced up with maybe the launch of the Shadow Track and the Laser Exterminator, because this story falls reasonably early in the Action Force continuity.
While the Shadows get some early wins, the tide begins to turn against them. A member of the local forces realizes that the Shadows are after the supply of fuel and detonates the base's fuel reserves rather than let them fall into the hands of the enemy.
Helicopter gunships arrive to give aid to the local South American forces. They close in on a Shadow Track driven by Red Vulture with the Black Major on board. The Black Major destroys one of the gunships easily with the aid of a bazooka.
Easily.
But before he can reload, he finds himself caught between the remaining helicopter and a tank.
We're finished. But Red Vulture's incredible driving saves them both. He veers out of the line of fire of both tank and helicopter just as they open fire. In the chaos, both tank and gunship destroy each other, and the Black Major escapes. And there's a bit more pirate stuff going on in the
There's a lot of that.
Arr, Jim Ladd. Sorry, next.
But actually, in one of those panels, we also have our comic book version of the Wilhelm screen as well, as the gunship goes down.
It's literally all of the vowels, isn't it? All of the vowels apart from O and U.
It looked as if the Baron's forces were beginning to take control of the battle, but stubborn pockets of resistance still remained. And Mouton is called up to deal with one such scenario. Using its mighty strength, it rips down a sentry tower, killing the sniper within.
Mouton, like, doesn't get that much action in the comics, and it's really cool to see him in this one. This one slipped by me when reading in the past, because I've been trying to kind of like find out where Moutons are used throughout the kind of the runs, and I feel like they're underutilized. I feel like the Kraken only got the one story. Skeletron doesn't even appear in the comics. So I kind of, you know, I like when I see these kind of like extra characters, I do like that, you know, that they are included in some of the stories, even in a minor role.
Yeah, I mean, I love that we get to see as much of Baron Ironblood's force. I mean, this is an epic battle, and I know while we're kind of going over it, you know, we're brushing over the story very quickly, but this battle actually isn't, you know, it's not told in one issue, it's told over four issues. Like, the whole four issue run is just at this, you know, long-running description of the battle. So getting to see all these different types of elements of the Baron's army come into play is superb. But what I think is particularly interesting here, Mutons maybe hasn't really had a chance to properly prepare for the battle, and he's missing all of his accessories.
Do you know what? I have a theory about this. I feel like the artist was using reference material. And I feel like he had the Mouton at hand, but it didn't have the accessories. That's what in my head I'm guessing has happened here. And that, because otherwise you see the Mouton in all the other iterations of him being in the issues, and again there aren't that many. But he always has his you know, like the radar dish and the other things that are attached to
his visor and his weapon on his head.
I mean, that just looks like some mental diver is attacking them.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But I do, I mean, that I love the illustration. I love how Mouton is always made out to look like, rather than look like, I don't know, like the body of Arnold Schwarzenegger, he always has the body of like that fat boxer Butterbean. He's just like this massive body and like a tiny head. They always seem to do him like that. And it's you know, I kind of love the thought. You know, I like the fact that the Moutons were like the bats of the Palatoy Red Shadows kind of era, and then, but they're not really. I don't know that I don't know. They're not as, I suppose, cool as Battle Android Troopers. But obviously, in the way they've been upgraded in like Glary's comic, and I've seen people do some really cool. Like, they're always like about 7 feet tall. The Moutons in the upgrade, as if they're like a snake armor. More than a, you know, yes. More than a, like an android or something. But yeah, I do love that. Anywho. Meanwhile, the Black Major and Red Vulture are overseeing a supply of weapons and ammunition being loaded onto trucks. But before they can transport their booty, off base, a lone South American soldier sacrifices himself to prevent the enemy escaping with their spoils. The suicide attack leaves Red Vulture wounded and many of the Red Shadows dead. He raises his head to find himself surrounded by members of the local military.
As Red Vulture saved the Black Major earlier in the battle, the Black Major now gets to return the favour. Pretending to be dead, he's not noticed by the local forces. And when they turn their back on him, he strikes with lethal force. Both he and Red Vulture travel the battlefield, lending assistance where needed to turn the tide against the South American forces.
Yeah, the Black Major and the Red Vulture are definitely the standouts in this army, aren't they?
They're real soldiers. Whereas the recruits... There's actually, I've tagged on a little image at the end of the document that talks about where Baron Ironblood recruits his Red Shadows. And they're the losers, all the total dregs of society, complete losers, make up the body of the Red Shadow Army. But there's
the full force, effectively.
Yes. We'd be great Red Shadows. We certainly wouldn't be a Black Major or a Red Vulture. Well, maybe Eddie and Dave. Maybe Eddie and Dave.
Yeah, So, I mean, we could have Baron Iron Tree and the Ed Shadows, couldn't we? Or Ed Vulture.
Ed Vulture.
Ed Vulture works really well. Or Ed Jackal. Ed Jackal.
Whoa, yes. Ed Jackal.
I'll just be a crap Red Shadow that gets obliterated on the training course.
I'll be a Mouton with no accessories.
Amazing.
Eventually, the battle is won by the Red Shadows, and any remaining pockets of resistance surrender. Baron Ironblood descends from his safe place where he observed the battle to now celebrate with his troops and oversee the loading up of weapons and ammunition.
As he and the Black Major round a corner in a warehouse, they are confronted by a group of Red Shadows, who order them to drop their guns or die. The Baron demands to know what this is about, and the Shadows reveal themselves as a squad of SAS Force Commandos, who infiltrated the Baron's forces during the battle. Dun dun dun!
However, Red Vulture, lurking in the shadows, witnesses everything and strikes quickly, killing all of the SAS troopers.
What a waste.
What a waste, you know. But not before one of them hits a detonator, destroying the warehouse and the entire stockpile of weapons contained within it.
We're going to cover this quite often, and we have already spoken about it, but the amount of death that goes on both sides is pretty high, and you don't expect, you know, the heroes are just here, they're here to save the day, hey, and then they all get wiped out. It's like, wow. I know none of them are like named characters, but they are SAS commandos, so they do have a figure attached to them. It's just that obviously that particular figure is a character, you know, has been given the character's name at some stage. But I kind of feel like, you know, I just feel like there's no other comic like it out there, even for the time period. And it just, you know, it still had that remnants, I suppose, of Battle and all the previous kind of wartime comics that had come before it. So it was still kind of very much hooked on that, I don't know, that kind of like structure of how these issues worked, and you know, death was prominent, and it was always given to you, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, if you consider that in this particular run, Charlie's War is running in the same comic as these stories, and for anyone who's maybe not familiar with Charlie's War, I recommend you pick that up as an amazing piece of comic book storytelling of what life was like in the trenches during the First World War. And it's grim reading. Pat Mills, who's the writer of Charlie's War, doesn't hold back, and he lets you see the terror of the trenches in all its kind of hideous glory. That mindset, like the Battle, I feel we're on the cutting edge of war storytelling. So that trickled over into the Action Force storytelling. So it would be commonplace to see in these World War II stories massive amounts of death. And the writers and Action Force, they follow the trend, there's a lot of violence, I should say. Chris, I'm cracking up here.
Unadulterated. Just cut that last bit. Unadulterated violence. Yes. No, that's all staying in. What I was also going to say was I feel like Battle Action Force acts as a very clear bridge between those old war comics and then what we start to get with the branded, licensed kind of comics. And obviously Battle and Action Force kind of almost combined to have this Battle Action Force title, didn't they? So it was like Battle Comics and Action Force merging effectively. So what you do get is you get that, I suppose, that feeling of the old-time war comics mixed with this licensed brand, which obviously has to keep its characters in you know, in there. You know, so obviously they've got to come up with these ways of killing a lot of the characters off without necessarily killing any of the actual main characters off. And I think they did it really well, utilizing all of the different kind of, you know, factions, green shirts or black shirts in this case. And what I also find interesting is as you go into like, well, which we will eventually once we get out of, once we've done all of our Battle Action Force comics, we will move into the Marvel Action Force weekly and then monthly comics.
Yes.
So what you'll notice is that the violence does get kind of thinned out a little bit going into those comics, but still does retain some shocking moments, still utilizes death in kind of realistic ways. And you get this kind of, and Battle Action Force has just become this bridge. Like, it's a clear thing. You can see where the old inspirations are drawn, and you can see where it's going. As at the same time, you can see that, you know, you've got like a softening of it, or a, you know, like they're taking the edge off the war aspect by making it a little less realistic.
Absolutely.
But anyway, finally, the Baron, Black Major, and Red Vulture only barely escape. Our story ends with the Baron waving his fist in anger, like every issue, and swearing vengeance on Action Force. And that is a promise. Amazing. Another explosion, yeah. premature explosion alert. Brian, as an overall story, I mean, you know, what are your thoughts on this one? Is it one that you are really a big fan of?
It's probably not, in terms of the actual story arc itself, there's not much to it. It's an attack on a military base to try and get some new weapons and supplies. It's
that
a
fails.
Failure.
Yeah.
It's a total failure.
Yeah.
But what it does, what it does give us, you know, Jerry Finley, and you know, just before I kind of talk a little bit about the story here, Jerry Finley is one of the great British comic writers from the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
In fact, his career goes back, you know, much longer before the 70s. And he created Rogue Trooper. He gave us Rogue Trooper awesome. In 2000 AD. So which is, and what I'm finding is that we are looking at these Action Force comics, we're actually getting some of the greats of the British comic book industry working on these stories, which is brilliant to realize that now as an adult looking back. But in this particular story here, so while there's not much to the arc itself, what Jerry Day does do very successfully is that he gives us this incredibly fast-paced battle throughout, spread over four issues. I think there's roughly, I think, 5 pages per issue. So we've got 20 pages of all-out action. And it's really just following different pockets of the battle over this base and cutting between different, or segueing between different elements of the fighting. The momentum, the pacing is spot on throughout this.
I have to agree. Yeah, like one thing I do like, there's a couple of things actually I really like about it. One is the kind of brutality that it shows in the evil organization itself. Like they're not averse to, and we've seen it previously already anyway, but they're not averse to killing their own men. And it's obviously an insane, when you think about it logically, it makes no sense, but it also adds and reinforces the insanity, the aggression, the violence of this organization that you can't, it's like, well, they're evil as hell. Like that's them. They're just evil. It's, you know, it's classic 80s over the top kind of stuff. Now, the other thing I like about it is the fact that it hardly has any Action Force in it whatsoever. Like it because it doesn't have Action Force in it, but as in, it's just about the Red Shadows. And then right at the end, you get this reveal that some of the SAS Commandos have infiltrated the Red Shadows. Now,
there's actually a single dialogue bubble or speech bubble in there where the leader of that particular SAS squad reveals that Space Force picked up a transmission during the battle, and SAS Force got on the scene straight away and infiltrated during the chaos of the battle, disguised themselves as Red Shadows and infiltrated the Red Shadows then.
Awesome. So like we you know, obviously we get that information, but at the same time, like, we don't see them at all until that moment, and it's like, oh yeah, of course Action Force are involved as well, you know. And but then on top of that, their failure, the fact that they all get wiped out, and it's like, you know, you just think, wow, like, it's just, you know, you, it's not what you, you know, in any other kind of comic, it would be like, they're there to save the day, they stop them, they, you know, they'll escape by throwing a grenade and, you know, getting out of there or something, but then everyone gets out and they're all alive. But no, not with Action Force. With Action Force, it's like, okay, we've been sent in to do this really dangerous mission and we might not live at the end of it, and we all know that because we've been reading the comics the entire time. But I really like that about it, and the fact that you kind of get some character development in the bad guys, which again is something that is, you know, a lot of villains and a lot of, you know, the bad guys in comics and movies and TV, there's a lot of mystery around them, their backgrounds, what they're like, how they operate in battle and all this kind of stuff. And I find that in this particular issue, we get to see the Black Mage stretch his muscles. We get to see flex his muscles, but I like to say stretch them instead because of he's doing something new. Yeah, you get to see Red Vulture showing what he can do, like the best driver in the Red Shadows and all that kind of stuff. I love that little kind of added element. And Baron Ironblood just being a dick as usual.
He's a classic. He doesn't even take part in the battle himself.
He just turns up and shoots one of his own f***ing men.
That's on the training course. One guy makes it like 2 seconds too late, and there's no mercy.
It's like, thanks, boss. I'm really glad I'm doing everything to, you know, for your cause. Yeah, I don't know, it's quite funny. And again, what effect would that have on the other troops that make it? You know, like, you wonder if there wouldn't be that loyalty due to the fact that, you know, they've seen all this other stuff. You know, if you f*** up at any point, you're just going to die. And that doesn't necessarily breed the best soldier. It breeds someone that's going to be terrified and probably, you know, make a run for it when they can. So, I don't know, I find that really funny as a, you know, in reality, it just, you know, would never work.
I did find in one of my recent acquisitions, a copy of Battle Action Force, is a Red Shadows file card buried in the middle of the comic. And I'll just read off what it says here about the Red Shadows. Dregs of humanity from all corners of the world, attracted to barren Ironblood by empty promises of riches and power, brainwashed into ruthless, suicidal fighters by the Black Major, and ready to die for the cause, inverted commas.
Yeah.
And when you get that, I can just imagine Jerry Daly's given that like as a character bio of how he's going to write these Red Shadows, and it kind of adds up. They are... Yeah. They're not very confident soldiers. They're clearly brainwashed, because there's a lot of scenes where that we see there, you know, that the blood for the Baron, and they sacrifice themselves in the course of the battle. And the only real competent players are the Black Major, Red Vulture, and we do see Red Laser make a brief appearance
in the middle of the story too. Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, it does. I mean, the fact that they're kind of brainwashed too, I still think if you're seeing people get shot up by the boss for like doing something very, you know, for completing the course, that's probably going to override a little bit of unless they've got a brainwave scanner like Dr. Mindbender.
Ooh, yes.
But yeah, I find it really funny, but at the same time it's always so much fun to read. And the you're right, the kind of the storytelling, you know, that it's a general A to B story, isn't it? That it's their training, they battle, they escape. It's like that's the kind of structure of that particular story. But at the same time, there's so much going on in it, so many points of, you know, interest that just kind of crop up each time, that you're really into it and really drawn to it. And it's been the same for all of the issues we've covered so far.
Absolutely. And one final thing I'd say for Jerry Day is that he's created the story. It's all action. It is very fast paced. But at the end, there are no winners. And if there's going to be a twist in the tale, that really is the twist, is that, you know, in war, nobody wins. And that's the moral of this particular story, I reckon.
Yeah. It's probably also a good thing to point out some of the really good artwork as well by Jim Bleach. There's some like really nice scenes in there. I love the kind of panels where you've got a lot going on. He kind of squeezes a lot of stuff and a lot of action into, say, one single panel, like where the helicopter's attacking them, where that, you know, crash, where that gets destroyed by the tank, and the tank gets destroyed by the gunship, and the Shadow Track escapes. I really love how the Mouton is drawn. I just find him hilarious. He looks like Mr. Blobby with a tiny head. But then, like, where there are explosions, there's like, I mean, there's so much going on. You can see that the silhouettes of the, you know, of the troops getting obliterated in the explosions. You know, there's just so much. There's good dynamism in these as well, like when the Black Major uses the bazooka, and I think it's really well drawn as well.
That is actually, makes some great points there. Like, this, if you look at this even down at an individual panel basis, you get this foreshortening. You have a lot of content or characters in the foreground, and then with lines leading into the distance where you have either a helicopter or something coming into attack in the distance. They're very dynamic, the battle scenes. The explosions are superb. And I was just doing a little bit of research on, you know, for this issue, doing a bit of research on Jim Bleach. Jim Bleach has been drawing comics from the 1950s. So by the time he's gotten to this particular story, he's got 30 years under his belt.
Nice.
As a comic book artist. So he's a real heavyweight on the British comics team. And some of these scenes that we see in this story have become like iconic sort of Red Shadow images as well. So there was a lot of full color work produced for this particular run, in that it was featured in the center spread in all of the four issues that it ran for.
That's awesome.
So it always got two full color pages before you flip over to the black and white.
Something we haven't discussed about some of these comics so far is the price. Only 20 pence. I mean, that is like, the last time I paid 20p for something was probably when I was about 8 years old. I think it was probably like a bag of, like, I don't know, like a bag of sweets or something. But that is, or a bag of crisps. It would have been a bag of potato chips for our American listeners. But that is just insane. And also, I love the cover on the first, like, I suppose the first lead-in issue to this story, the Beat the Booby Traps or Die cover. And the fact you've got like the great Activision competition inside and the new Baron Ironblood story starts today. What was the competition inside? Have you got, you've got that comic, right?
So I have this particular issue in my hand now, and I'm trying to find this Activision competition.
And if you could take a picture of it for me, Brian, I'll post that in the video as well.
Yes, here we go. Okay, so great prizes in our free competition. And the prizes are Activision River Raid, Activision Pitfall,
nice,
and Activision Enduro. Six first prizes of three Activision games cartridges. Wow, that's great. 15 runner-up prizes of Activision game cartridges. Oh, and the actual competition is, there's a, it's a picture of Johnny Red and Ratov. His kind of gunner,
yeah,
and they're playing the Battle Action Force. Sorry, they're playing an Activision game on their TV.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I can't wait to see that because yeah, that'll take me back.
And then there's blank speech bubbles, and so for the competition, you have to fill in your own words.
It's caption this pick, isn't it? That's what they've done. That's like the old school caption this pick. That's genius. Dude. We should do that. We should run that. We should get people to caption it,
on this episode,
and yes, give away like a IDW selection of comics or something. Yeah. Anyway, Brian, it's been a pleasure, mate. Thank you so much. And now we've got this inadvertent competition to throw in as well. But thank you for joining me again.
Absolutely, absolutely loved it, sir. Absolutely loved it.
That's it for this installment of Disorder of Battle. Thank you to my co-host Brian Hickey and to our sponsors Dublin City Comics and Collectibles. See you next time, and as always, full force. So, based on the awesome Activision competition from this particular Battle Action Force comic from 1983, we thought it would be fun to give you guys a chance to win a load of IDW comic goodies, including G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero number 253 out this month. All you have to do is 1. Locate the Facebook post titled Disorder of Battle Comic Competition. 2. Like and share the post. And 3. Comment with your caption and then wait patiently for us to decide the best one to be revealed on Monday the 9th of July. Good luck and full force. Make sure you get involved with the discussion by liking, sharing and commenting on these videos, and as always you can keep up with the show after listening by following on Twitter at The Full Force, liking the Facebook page facebook.com/TheFullForce, and if you would like to contact the show you can message us on either of these platforms with feedback, questions or to say, who do you think you are? A serious operation now? No, not even close. Look out for more of these news bursts that we are posting on the Facebook page from now on. Full Force. And a big shout out to our sponsors, Dublin City Comics and Collectibles. Located at 46 Bolton Street, Inns Quay, Dublin 1, Ireland, you can visit their website at dublincitycomics.ie and on Facebook at facebook.com/DublinCityComics.